Welcome to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Hulings Fund for Visual Artists. The Clark Hulings Fund exists to provide training, introductions, and funding for working artists to turn working artists into thriving artists.
I'm Daniel DeGree, your host. Our guest is Jane Robinson. Jane is a contemporary abstract artist who specializes in acrylic and mixed media. Jane also conducts workshops for other artists under the banner of The Business of Creativity, as well as a monthly meetup group. Jane, welcome aboard, and can you take a minute to tell us a little bit about your background and what you do?
Well, like most people, I've had a varied background with a variety of careers, and the one thing that's always been constant in my life has been art. It wasn't, though, until my daughters left home that I began to take it serious and realized you could really make a living selling art. So that's basically my story.
Well, you've had a really interesting professional background as well. I mean, first as a probation officer, and that which may surprise our listeners, and then as a director of a nonprofit. How did you cross over from those careers into being a full-time artist?
Well, while I was working as a felony probation parole officer, I got introduced and part of our local art community. And I wanted to write a grant to bring an artist coach to our community, and I wrote the grant, received the grant, and we hosted an artist business coach, and that introduction and through those relationships, it kind of cemented the idea that I was a left brain, right brain thinker. While I can paint and create, I also realize the business side of art. So when our community was taking the state's first prison that is located in our downtown that was being used by the National Guard, they turned it into an artist live work community. And when they were looking for a director, they came a knocking. So I left my state security and jumped ship and went to lead this artist live work community. And that was just an incredible experience of trial and error and what worked and how to work with artists and what they need. And in the meantime, still continuing to build my own art career. So that's what led me into the nonprofit world.
So it sounds like a pivotal moment in your background. Has the professional aspects of your background, you know, especially I got to be curious about the probation work. Has that helped or hindered your current art career? And if it's helped, then what aspects of it do you find applicable?
Well, I think the main thing is just as I was talking to one of our funders this morning, we walk 3 miles on trails every morning with the dog, and she said, you know, the best piece of advice I have learned from you is something you used to tell your parolee probationers, and that is, I will not work harder at your life than you're willing to. And I think that's really the philosophy that, one, jump-started my selling of my art, was recognizing that no one is going to care about my art career as much as I am. And so if I wanted to get serious about it, I better get busy. And with that same philosophy, that is really about what the business of creativity and the meetups that I lead with artists is really trying to convince them that they need to get busy and they need to have a plan to build their own art career. No one is going to come knocking on their door or their studio and discover them. So, you know, care about your life and, you know, take the steps you need to make it what your dream is.
So it sounds like you're saying that artists need to be more than creatives. They essentially need to be creative entrepreneurs. And I'm curious, why do you believe it's important for artists to manage their art as a business instead of sort of remain in a creative shell?
Well, and I don't for every artist. I just want them to really dig deep and look at themselves and what they really want out of their art. For many people, they just love the act of the creating. They have no interest in selling it or getting into galleries or anything like that. They'll give them out as gifts to their friends and family, and that's great because we all love the creating part of it. But when your studio starts getting packed up to the ceiling with your paintings or your pottery or whatever, and you'd like to sell some of it to buy more art supplies or maybe, you know, help with that household income, then you need to think about it as a business. You're selling a product, the same as any other entrepreneur.
You teach these workshops, and I wonder if you had to sum up in, say, 5 words roughly, what I can expect to learn concretely in the business of creativity workshops and meetups. What would that be?
Well, that is tough, but it's really about identifying yourself as what I call an artpreneur. You're an artist, and you are a business. And so the meetups and the workshops are all about integrating both of those aspects into your life.
Is that sort of an interdisciplinary approach? I mean, do you find, we say art and business, you know, they sound like such big nebulous categories, right? I mean, there are things to study within art. You can spend half your life studying light within art. And within business, there are a lot of different aspects. So do you find that you're weaving together different aspects of art and business in particular, or that it's sort of a theory, but they are essentially two different silos and you have to turn and focus on one or the other at any given moment?
Well, I think they are probably different silos, but that doesn't mean that you can't strengthen your muscles in both areas. You know, you take studio time and really hone your craft. You can't get better unless you're in the studio and learning and developing your own style and building your own body of work. So it's recognizable as you. And then when you're ready to put it out into the world and hopefully sell it, then you know, can use that other silo, but we use a lot of the art and creativity part about being an artist as your strong point in building your business. You really just focus on your style, your brand, what brand, your personality, your backstory. Give them a glimpse of who you are beyond that canvas or that piece of pottery. They want to see what do artists do in their studios? What is their story? And the more you do that, you're building your brand, you're building your name, and then people start coming to you. You're not out there, you know, pushing a sale, doing hard sales. You're just doing what comes natural to you as being an artist. And then once you see that, you know, by putting in the time of sharing your story and building your brand and your body of work, that then when people start coming to you, you know, it's a win-win.
This is a common meme right now, you know, building your personal brand almost to the point of excess. And, you know, I run a marketing strategy company and people ask me about it. And it's really hard to put into tangible terms what that really means, you know, concrete terms. What does it take to build a brand? And it is different for every professional. I wonder if you have any insights on exactly how artists would go about creating their own brand, sort of beyond the theory that we need to have a brand. What do I do? Where do I start? And what do I do to create my brand?
Well, I think you need to examine a little bit about yourself. What makes you you? What are the quirky things about you? What are the things, what are you drawn to? I, of course, have dozens and dozens of artist friends, and when I think of them, I know one is, you know, this mad New Yorker steampunk artist who talks like a sailor and tells you what it is, and, you know, and that's his brand. He sells his art because people are drawn to him and his work, you know, while somebody else might be that very reflective, intuitive, or spiritual person, and that is evident, you know, possibly in their work or telling that story. And other people are attracted to her and her work. But it's hard to separate your work from who you are. And that's why, you know, getting yourself out into, you know, art shows and art fairs or gallery receptions or open studio events where people can really put a face with you. They can really feel like they've gotten to know you. Then you're building your brand without really trying, but they now have that connection with Jane Robinson, this abstract artist. And part of my brand is, is that I am a jazz fan, and I always paint to jazz music. And I title my paintings Jazz Musicians and Jazz Songs, and most people know that once they get to talk to me. And if I'm at a show, I might have an iPod with the tracks of the songs that this piece was inspired by. And people will shoot me an email afterwards, or they'll put up on Facebook that when they hung their painting in their home or their business or whatever, they also went and checked out who Charlie Mingus was or Charlie Parker, et cetera. So it's really then opens that conversation between the two of us. That makes sense?
It does make sense. It sounds like you're drawing a distinction, though, between identifying your brand, which is about knowing the essential you, as you put it, and where sort of being quirky is actually an asset, versus putting your brand out there, which is essentially marketing. And you referred to marketing. You talked about so it's the internal work of identifying your brand, the external work of expressing your brand. You talked about art shows, art fairs, gallery receptions, open studio events. I'm curious, how have you marketed your work? And also, you mentioned Facebook. So what role has social media played overall in your art career?
I believe in using social media because I think artists are really living in an unprecedented time where I live in Michigan. Actually, I live way out in the country in a log house surrounded by farmland. And yet the world is my marketplace, thanks to the internet. And so using social media, I use Pinterest a lot because it's so visual. Using Facebook, using Instagram, but also using it not just to post images of your work, but again, to tell a little bit about your story. When I was in Chicago in December, anyone who I spoke to about my art, I had a paintbrush that I put a Salvador Dali mustache on, and then I asked them to hold it up over their lip, and I took their photos. I gave them a card, and I told them, in a week after I get home, come check out this link. And it was a link to a video I made of all those smiling faces holding up that Salvador Dali mustache in front of one of my paintings or one they bought to the music, Hello Dali. And so it drove the traffic to my social media where then they would friend you or at least start conversations or follow your Pinterest board or that, or they just got a kick out of it. And because I included them in it. So then I ask also anyone who buys a painting, please send me a photo of that painting in your home or business or whatever, or put it on Facebook and then friend me. So then they start doing the marketing for you because they're showing all their 500 friends this new painting that they just got from Jane Robinson.
You know, it's interesting. You're talking about social as a storytelling medium and, you know, sort of underscoring the essential role of story in art, you know, it being quintessential to your brand. You know, I know one of my clients had talked about how social has been beneficial. They said, we found our public. And so you've underscored the need to find your public, to grow your audience, if you intend to sell your art, if you intend to come out of the studio and make money for paintbrushes and supplies and living expenses, if you really want to grow your artists as a business. And I'm wondering, though, once artists do this, once they step into this realm of telling their story, growing their brand, finding their public, building their audience, how can they do these essential business building tasks without sacrificing their craft as artists? Isn't there, in addition to one sort of flowing into the other, isn't there a conflict? Doesn't it take away their attention and their drive to actually create?
No, and I think it enhances it actually, because, well, I'm going to back up a second. I tell other artists that you should plan on devoting as many hours that you put into studio time, put that into business building events or, you know, activities. I also tell them to take 40% of all their earnings and reinvest it in yourself, whether it is, you know, those high-end art shows where your booth is $5,000, you know, or new supplies, or maybe boosting a Facebook post, something, you know, that you are investing in yourself. So I find that when people feel empowered about their art career and that they have the tools to do it, it pushes you in the studio, too, because you now have a larger audience. It's not just Grandma and Cousin Mike, but you have a worldwide audience. And putting in that studio time is important, but and it is so solitary, and it should be something where you're trying to grow as a personal artist without trying to make art that you think people will want to buy. But doing it the way I suggest, by building your brand, your audience will find you. You don't have to, you know, try to fit into the mold of anything else. So I think it's very empowering that artists take control of their art careers.
That dovetails with, you know, sort of the modern emphasis on work-life balance. You know, that regardless of the career field we've chosen, we all need some downtime. We need exercise. We need room for creativity. We need really high productive time. We need time for collaboration with others. You know, there are these core needs that, you know, we know a lot about now, or maybe one would say we've had to do a lot of work to recover because people used to know a lot about them. And you are sort of underscoring the need to align the areas of an artist's life in the same way that businesses struggle to align the areas of their business. So in any given business, you've got the areas of production where you're creating the stuff that you're, the output. In this case, you're creating art. So that's the production side. And it's part of your overall operations. Your operations are all the things you have to do. You have to buy supplies. You know, you have to stretch canvas if that's you, etc. There's the sales side, the marketing side, and there's the finance. And it sounds like you're really arguing for having sort of a balance of all the parts and aligning all the different areas to produce, I guess, a more holistic or a fuller lifestyle from artists. But I don't want to put words in your mouth. Am I digging at the wrong thing? Is there something more there?
I think you're really right on track with my philosophy, but I would add that also you need to find camaraderie with other artists. Don't feel like you are having to do this all alone. And whether it's, you know, that they join their local arts council or an artist group or a critique group or whatever. And that's what our meetups are. I mean, 100 artists, we get together once a month, and we call it our tribe. And when you've missed it for a month or something, you really start feeling the need to go and be energized by that creative tribe that understands you and gets you. And one of the questions we always ask each other is, how can I help you? If someone's having an open studio event, let's all promote it. Let's all try to show up. Let's all try to be, you know, supportive, whatever it is. And like one of our artists in our meetup is a wonderful photographer. So I hired him. And we're asking other artists, when you need photography, whether it's, you know, for your headshot or of your artwork or whatever, let's support each other and then give credit where it's due to. And so in addition to all the other parts about that work balance, I think, is adding in that you need to have some sense of community. Because sometimes, you know, our husbands, our wives, our mothers, are, you know, they're going to give up that childish dream of making a living as an artist. They don't always understand it, or maybe at best they tolerate it until you start really making money. But other artists get it, and they support you because they know what their life would be without creating. And so they want you to, you know, create and be supported in your efforts.
I like that. You said 100 artists, and I immediately, my eyes lit up. I'm like, oh, that's like a million-man march. I can't imagine being at the end of the hill, and over the hill are coming 100 artists. It's like, whatever will we do? It's like, wow, that's a force. And so I get it.
Yeah.
You know, by putting your heads together in community, it really empowers artists, maybe not in an external way, but in an internal way to sort of get their heads around their business. So what infrastructure do artists need before they start out as emerging artists to market their art? For instance, do they need, you know, in order to be successful, do they need to first have a cohesive collection? Do they need to do audience research or build a particular skill set? Or do they need to have art that is sort of photographically ready or ready for publication? What are the essentials?
Well, I think, one, they need their studio time. They need to make sure their work has an audience. It's hard for artists to really be objective about their own work. And, you know, I'll see work and I'm going like, well, it's really not that good. But keep at it and build your style. And when you do try to go to market, whether it's even a small local art fair, the public will kind of tell you with their dollars whether your work is, you know, great at that price or whatever. But build a cohesive body of work. I think that's the number one thing. I look back at my first paintings and I just cringe. Or if people tell me, oh, I bought a painting from you back in, you know, 19, whatever. And I go, oh, no, inside I'm cringing because I've grown. And I'm hoping that this is something I do the rest of my life, is grow as an artist and improve as an artist. So in the respect to your question, I think it is really put everything you have into being the best at what you do, the best you can be at what you do. And don't compare yourself to other artists. What works for one artist isn't going to work for you. And all that self-doubt and self-criticism, it just really blocks that creative flow. I met with an artist last week. They live a couple hours away, and they asked to meet for lunch. And she is just always doubting her ability and taking workshop after workshop after workshop, thinking that's going to be the key to her getting, you know, great. And yes, there's a time and a place for taking workshops and learning skills, but at some point you have to just put in that studio time and create what's in your soul, and then you work at finding the audience for that work, if that makes sense.
So how do you determine, once you've done that work, what shows you will attend or galleries that you show your work in, or do you just take everything that comes?
Well, it depends on where you are in your career. You know, I think new artists, and like myself, I began at very local shows. They didn't have a huge financial investment. You know, you go out and buy your tent and all that, but it gives you such valuable feedback about interacting with the public and how to talk about your art. And how to interact, and the people's response to it, how to build a mailing list. It's just really a training ground. And then as you had, you know, a couple of those under your belt, you go to the next level, and then maybe the next level. And right now, where I'm at, it's kind of a sweet spot because people will contact me and say, we're opening a new gallery in Vancouver, Canada, and we'd like to consider your work. Or we're doing this, or we are adding a spring show to the Chicago one-of-a-kind show. Would you be interested in participating? The Ann Arbor Art Fair, a woman came into my booth in Chicago a year ago in December and said, oh, gal, Michigan, do you ever participate in the Ann Arbor Art Show? And I gave her like three or four reasons why I really wasn't too interested in it. And she said, well, I'd like you to reconsider. I'm the director of the Fine Art Show, and I think your work would be good. So I went ahead and told her I would participate, and I ended up having a great show. So, but before I do any show or gallery, I spend some time in doing my homework. I see which artists participated in the past, which artists have work that is at least similar in some way to my own and price point, and then I call them or email and ask them, "What? How was your experience? You know, I'm considering doing this show, and tell me about your experience." And same with galleries and same with things online. I do a little bit of homework because I really don't want to, one, spend the money or time and energy if it's just another one of those vanity galleries or juried shows where there's going to really be of no benefit to myself.
And it sounds like that attending shows has added a lot of value to your career personally.
It has. And as I said, I meet thousands and thousands of people that I could never reach without being there in person, talking to them, you know, learning to talk about your work, making the connections. I always find a way that in exchange for their email address or contact information, they get some benefit. And it might be a drawing for a commissioned painting. It might be a drawing for a finished painting. It might be to attend one of my art workshops, et cetera, et cetera. And then I go home and I put in those, you know, 600 emails that I got or whatever. And so then I can stay in touch with them and say, hey, guess what? I'm going to be back in Chicago, or I'm going to be here, or I'm going to be there, or here's my latest work. And because, you know, you've shown interest, I'll give you a 10% discount. So I can build my contacts and my relationships long after the show's over.
What is it, if we could identify one thing that has helped you the most in the beginning of your first starting out, what would that thing be? And is there any advice you would give to emerging artists to sort of focus on?
Well, I'll tell you, it was pivotal in my art career. Well, I guess there were two things. One is when I recognized that no one's going to care more about my art career than myself, and I should invest in myself. And I worked with some coaches and artist business coaches and et cetera. But the second thing was a very odd thing. Was, oh, maybe 6 years ago, I all of a sudden, somebody in my family noticed that I had lost a big bald spot of hair on my head. And it just progressed until I was just had a few sprouts of hair, lost my eyelashes, my eyebrows, everything. And I went to the doctor, of course, and they're perplexed too, but I was diagnosed with alopecia. And why at my age it decided to rear its ugly head, I have no idea. But at the same time with my artwork, people were asking me to do abstract paintings and then put in a dragonfly and put in a little flower here and do a little this and a little that. And also there were a product I was creating for new babies. You send me your baby photo. I incorporate it into a painting, put their date of birth, all the vitals, et cetera. And then you have a one-of-a-kind kind of birth announcement, keepsake painting for your baby that doesn't look like it's all Mickey Mouse and giraffes and sunshine. But the truth of it was is that it was like being a factory worker. And I just started hated doing them because it was no fun. So with this hair loss, my husband and I were on vacation down in the Keys at Florida, and I'd get up early every morning, wrap a scarf around my head, and take a walk. And I started noticing that there were old men and women holding hands and children running out into the water to collect sea cells and different things. And it really dawned on me that this is what life is about. And it's not about your hair. And I went home, I shaved my head, and decided I would then only paint what was in my soul. I wasn't going to try to keep everybody else happy or guess what they wanted from me. So my hair grew back pure white. It was a dark brunette. And I started painting what was in my soul. And at the same time, I started selling like hotcakes. And I just really attributed it to finding my style, finding what I needed to create, and not worry about what I think people would want or would buy. And same with my hair, screw it. It is what it is. It's, you know, life is life, and you're not dying, so shave it and get on with life. And it both turned out to be great positives in my life.
That's really wonderful. It's your hair is a window to your art. If you could have a technology or superpower to do something that you're currently just not able with your art and career, what would be?
Well, I've never really thought of that, but I've wondered if 20 years from now or 30 years from now, there wouldn't be technology where you buy a canvas, hang it in your home, and then you pay and upload artwork onto it. So you can change your artwork in your house or office just like you change a radio station. I don't know if that would be good or bad for artists. I'm thinking, you know, the licensing fees and things like that would then kind of go into what musicians are fighting for right now is payment for their work. But I wonder if technology won't take us there, because even when I started selling online or talking to people about selling online, they told me never would they buy art online. And I said, I always said that about reading a book too, until I got a Kindle. And technology changes the way we do life and, you know, all of it nowadays. So I wonder if that technology wouldn't be there in the future. But As I said, I don't know if it'd be a good or a bad thing.
Well, it'll happen nonetheless. I remember in the early 90s when people said, I will never use email. Maybe about 45% of the people that I knew were saying, I will never use email. And of course, every one of them now had an address. And, you know, I believe in face-to-face. But, you know, things move. People said that about social media, said about lots. So, yeah, I mean, the technology
right.
exists, of course. You know, sooner or later, somebody will join a tablet or some other kind of virtual canvas to a 3D printer. And next thing you know, you can paint in one place virtually, and it will, and the actual art will be outputted in another physical location. And it may be antithetical to what a lot of us stand for. You know, some values associated with analog work and so on. But whether or not we personally adopt it, the technology will arise. It will be adopted. It will continue to exist, and it will affect the market around us, and so on. So it's something to watch. I think that's visionary to sort of point out that whether it's a good thing or a bad thing doesn't mean that's quite useful.
Exactly.
You've been listening to the Thriving Artist Podcast, a feature of the Clark Healings Fund for Visual Art. To find out more about Jane Robinson, take one of her workshops, or join her meetup, visit janerobinsonabstractart.com. That link and other information is available on the Clark Healings Fund website in the notes for this podcast episode. For more information on the Clark Healings Fund, visit clarkhealingsfund.org. And be sure and follow our podcast in iTunes and Stitcher. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Jane. It's been really great having you.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun.